In the beginning, Arjuna has a problem, right? No problem, no program, right? Like that. No problem, no program. So there's a problem. Before we got a whole thing happening here. And his problem is that he's, in the beginning, he wants to satisfy his wife, you know, in a just fashion. She deserves to get her revenge. You know, he deserves to get his revenge, you know. Some of things like this are happening. But it's, you know, it's okay. So, everyone's staring at you like that. It's like either a dog or a child has come on stage. Every actor knows when the whole audience is looking at something else, it means either a dog or a child has come on stage like that. So I don't know. I guess you're a brahmachari, a child. Yeah. So he has this desire to you know, satisfy his wife and win the battle, regain her honor. He's a karmi, not a vikarmi, not a bad person, but a fellow wants to follow the rules and regulations. I worked hard. No, I deserve this, like that, you know. And so Krishna shows him, yeah, even if you're going to be a karmi in this world, it's all a world of dualities. So if your wife's going to be happy, their wives are going to be unhappy, you know. And even more intensely, he shows him this by putting him in front of Bhishma and Drona, who are his teacher and his grandfather. Then Arjuna wakes up. This is karma. Wow, karma is never good. So he says, okay, I'm going to renounce everything. You know, because on the basis of knowledge, you know, jnana comes, vairagya, vasudeva bhagavati bhakti yoga prayojitaha, jana, janayati, any word by word here, janayati asu vairagyam. Jnanam shayada hoitukam. Jana is born quickly. Jana asu yati vairagyam. So it's born very quickly from engaging in devotional service. First knowledge, jnana, and then what's next? Jnana and yeah, which means? Yeah. So on the basis of knowledge, then we renounce things like that. Yeah. So Arjuna's come to that point, you know. But what's the problem? He can't do it. He's not a jnani. And so he can't go to the forest and sit down and just engage in austerities, chant Hare Krishna 24 hours a day. He's a big, powerful guy. If he was here now, he'd be like this big like that, you know, Arjuna like that. Very intelligent. Look at everybody, you know. Analyze everybody exactly where they're at like that, you know. Okay. We're going to take over this country in 14 days. You with me? Yeah. Yes, sir. Yeah. Okay. It's like that. He's a real clever, intelligent guy, personal strength. He can't. He's a man of action, you know. So this whole jnana process, sitting down, doing all sorts, forget it, you know. So damned if you do, and damned if you don't. You can't fight the battle. You can't walk away from it. So then he surrenders to Krishna, right? Had no choice. Sisyastaham sarimam tvam prapanam. Second chapter. So when Krishna starts to explain, first thing he explains, which is so common, is this, look at this world, just take a couple seconds, right, and start to just put everything in proper place like that, you know. Sometimes I would come into the kitchen after the Sunday feast, you know, and you know, the cook somehow, they would use one pot, one utensil, one spoon, and then they, rather than wash, they would get them, pull another one off the rack. And so after a while, it was like 25 pots, 37 spoons, 2,000 knives, 1,800, you know, colanders, all stacked up on the floor, everything else. And finally, the offering would go onto the altar like that with this consciousness. It's chaos consciousness. Prabhupada said in his mother's kitchen, every single time you were cooking, you're cleaning, cooking, cleaning, cooking, cleaning. So in the final moments, it was just like a little bit of one or two utensils, a little bit of wiping the counter a little bit, finished. It wasn't you build up all this gigantic, you know, deficit of, you know, sinks, floors, and everything else. And he said all the pots were shining. If they would come from the serving girls who were supposed to clean them, and there was one like carbon spot under something, go right back to the serving girl. Yeah. Madame wants everything like shining. So Prabhupada says, when you eat prasadam prepared in a kitchen like that, immediately you feel refreshed. So there's a difference in the kind of prasad, depending on the kind of offering like that, the consciousness. So Krishna said, then the first thing I would do is, okay, all this big mess. Okay, first you try and uncover the sink. Get that. One for washing, one for rinsing. Okay, then, you know, then kind of put everything in different categories, you know, spoons, all the things. Okay, now we can start to, like, you know, efficient. In chapter 2, this goes on a little bit, and in but it's not detailed enough to really practically apply it. I was thinking that, but I was thinking, well, that's offensive to think that about Bhagavad Gita. But then Prabhupada says, no, Krishna hasn't given enough details in chapter 2 to actually really apply it. So in chapter 3, Krishna gives vritti, a professional devotional service. What is your profession? I'm a devotee. Yeah, but that means I'm a Brahmin devotee, I'm a Kshatriya devotee, I'm a Kshatriya Vaishya devotee, I'm a Shudra Kshatriya devotee, like that. And you figure out what your position is, then that's your service. But now it's something you can actually do like that, you know, like that with your body, you know, so on. So he's explaining, all living entities subsist on food grains. Food grains come from? Huh? Yeah, rain comes from? Sacrifice. Sacrifice comes from? My God. Prescribed duties. Yeah. Prescribed duties come from? The Vedas. That's so very practical. What is your, look in the Vedas, it tells you what the duty of a Kshatriya is. You know, that's your sacrifice. Be a Kshatriya. From that sacrifice will come rain. From that rain will come food. Okay? Okay. Yeah, very simple. Like that, we got bread. We can live, you know? Yeah. And so this is very practical. Very practical. So, but in this part, he's just starting this kind of like analytical thing, you know, Sankhya. And first off, he says, hey, look, you know, in the first place, the matter is always changing, right? Yeah. And we're, but we, the soul, don't change, right? All the world's a stage, and the men and women, they're in mere actors. And they have their entrances and their exits. And a man in his life plays seven parts. First, the infant, mewling and puking in his mother's arms, right? Then the young boy heading off to school with shining morning, young student heading off to school with his book bag, with a shining morning face, making it snail's pace to school. Do you remember this? Going to school and yeah, talk with your friends and yeah. Next, the young lover, you know, composing a poem describing his mistress's eyebrows. Oh, Juliet, your eyebrows are like two sharp bows and your eyes are like arrows that have pierced my heart, like that. Sighing like a furnace, like that. Next is a young warrior full of brave oaths and strange sayings, even into the cannon's mouth. Vive les France! Yes, you know. And bearded like the leopard. Yeah, this is Shakespeare from the play. From a play called As You Like It, as opposed to Bhagavad Gita As It Is. This is As You Like It. The next is the justice with a beard of a more formal cut, full of very wise saws and common instances, good stories about what's happening, and very sharp with a good cape on. Next is the old man now. Now his skinny shanks too narrow for the wide world. And now he did different kinds of house clothes, and his big manly voice now changing to mere treble whistles. Yeah. And again comes second youth, second childhood, like that, you know. And then finally old age, and so ends teeth, so ends eyes, so ends ears, so ends everything, like that. So it's very changing bodies. And King Solomon gives the same meditation. It's there in Shakespeare, it's in Bhagavad Gita, it's in King Solomon. You have this diorama. You've seen this? You know, this thing, like, some are big, like, you know, 2 meters tall, like that. We travel, like, and it shows all different ages like that. We have one which is about, like, you know, 1 meter by 1 meter square, little platform. We take it out chanting like that. And one time we were chanting in front of this big bookstore, and this lady, it looks like a lady and her sister, and the lady's children came. And the lady and her sister went in the store with one of the girls. Another girl was just standing outside, you know, just kind of hanging out. We were chanting. And she was looking at the figures and saying something, and I was kind of listening. And she was saying, Susie, Mommy, grandma, me. And so she was, so she was identifying her different family members, like with each of the ages, like that. And so it's very natural. Once somebody just shows you this, another time we had a big one set up in a park for a festival in Madua. And this is the big one. It was like, you know, it was like on a truck. It was like on a trailer. It was like about 2 meters tall. There's so many times I watch these people, these students who go on their bicycles, and you have the students, they know everything, the most elite people on earth, you know. So the guy's going by, you know, Hare Krishnas, you know. And they look at this exhibit, he put it right by the main bicycle path, and the guys would slow down, and meantime they'd go around that in a circle, come back, and finally stop, and they would look. You can see they're like looking, you know. They could see, because they could see, hey, that's where I am. That's where I was. That's where I'm going. So very potent meditation, contemplation, to think about this. You know, you look at everybody here. Everybody here, I'm a great mystic, I can tell this. Everybody here at one time was this big. Right? Am I right? Yeah. Sometimes you live that long, you're going to be, all your teeth are going to fall out, you're going to go blind, your memory will go like that, your liver will stop functioning. And hopefully your heart will become purified and take you out of this body. Okay. You know? Prabhupada says old age is a good friend for a devotee. So he gives this analysis, this Sankhya, this analysis like that. Then one verse here looking for. Okay, there it is. Yes, sir. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama. Well, actually, Emerson, the American author, he has a poem based upon this, on the Bhagavad Gita. Yeah, they had contact with Bhagavad Gita. If the red slayer thinks he is slain, or the slain thinks he is slain, they do not know my something ways, who comes and comes and turns again. Very good poem. But this is his impression of this first part of Bhagavad Gita about Krishna. Yeah. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. I hope it's here. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Ah, it's not here. Okay. Maybe it's in chapter 3. It's the one where the boat, yeah, if you focus even on one of the sense objects, it can, like a boat on the wind. It's chapter 3? Yeah. Okay. So, because Bhagavad Gita, our knowledge is a spiral. It's the same thing again and again, but from a higher perspective. So it's took in chapter 3 then. Where is it? Which example? Where is it? About what verse? About text 20 or something like that? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. I think it's after the food grains. Yeah. For one who takes pleasure in the self, therefore. Yeah, okay. Yeah. You gotta act even. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Rama. No? My gosh. Well, it's the same ones here, though. Okay, this will also be text number 36. 336. Yeah. Arjuna uvacha atha kena prayukto yam papang charati purushaho Anichannapi Varshneya Baladiva Niyojitaha. Translation. Arjuna said, O descendant of Vrishni, by what is one impelled to sinful acts, even unwilling, as if engaged by force? Huh? Or by what is one impelled? It's a sinful act, even unwillingly, as if engaged by force. So again, this is a very common experience in life. You know, one man said, smoking. He said, I have no problem giving up smoking. I've already done it 25 times. Right? Yeah. But the thing is, you can't control yourself like that. There's Alcoholics Anonymous, and from that there's Narcotics Anonymous, and there's also, it's called Sexaholics Anonymous, something like that, but it's the same thing. The people, they don't want to do it, but they get involved in one lascivious relationship after another with all kinds of problems, one after another, like that. There's so many realizations about this, you know. Alcoholics Anonymous, one of their statements is, insanity is doing the same thing the same way and expecting a different result. Yeah? I renounce alcohol, but then I go to the bar and I'm just going to take seltzer water. When my friends are going to drink wine, but I'm not going to take any. I'm just going to take some seltzer water. Then I fall down, you know? But this time I'm not going to do it. I fall down. And I'm going to, no, you do the same thing the same way and expecting a different result. No, you got to change something. There's many very wisdom things about this karma and this reaction. People seeing it's happening like that. Actually, anybody here ever gone to Alcoholics Anonymous meeting? I went to one. Yeah, it's very much like our program, no? So I mean, you see the same elements are there. People get up and talk about what's happening and stuff like that, and they have a whole program. And they talk about a higher force like that. They don't go into getting any names. For example, there are some devotees who went through the Vietnam War and had hellish, traumatic experiences like that. So they're, you know, trying to take shelter of alcohol. So there was a Hare Krishna Alcoholics Anonymous group in Los Angeles. Yeah. So you can be Jewish or whatever, you know. Yeah. You can be Jewish or whatever, you know, Hare Krishna Protestant. So they make this general thing about a higher force. And they say you're not going to get off alcohol, you're not going to stay off alcohol without that higher force. Nitai Gaur Sundar, our president of NEOS, he's a psychiatrist. And so to stay certified, he has to keep taking classes, courses. So he had all these cassette tapes of lectures and stuff he was just listening to. So I started listening to some of them. I'm background in psychology. And it's pretty much even the biggest atheists, in the world, they also pretty much admit the same thing. That you cannot get free from this drug addiction, alcohol addiction, and stay off of it without some kind of spiritual program like that. One time we were talking to, with Sri Dhamana Maharaj, we were talking to one professor. He was head of the, one of the two people in charge of the drug abatement program for the University of California. He's a big guy like that. And we were talking, Maharaj went regular dhoti and kurta. I went with civil clothes. We were talking all about the problems in Manipur with addiction and stuff like that. And he was talking about all this, and he said, actually, it's very interesting, because they said the number of deaths from all the illegal drugs combined, cocaine, heroin, methane, all this stuff, is insignificant compared to the number of deaths from alcohol and tobacco. Yeah. But alcohol and tobacco are part of the whole economic complex like that, you know. And so therefore, all this thing about the war on drugs, the real war is alcohol and tobacco. Like that. And he has a book called The Myth of Addiction, you know, about people that you get on heroin and you can't give it up. You're addicted like that. And he says, all these things, you know, there's no overwhelming thing like that. He said, actually, if you're taking, what kills you with heroin, he said, it's not the heroin, it's the impurities like that. He said, there are doctors who are heroin addicts for 25 years, you know. And it makes your liver work harder and you die, maybe you lost, maybe 10 years off your life or something like that from being stimulated like that. But they dose themselves regularly, properly with clean heroin, and this just keeps them this energy thing like that. So he said so many programs, you know, for getting off this, every time you want to take a cigarette, you slap your hand first hard and you smoke it like that. So you create this stimulus response, like a rat, you know, every time. So you associate smoking cigarettes with pain in your hand or something, you know. And so these things have some effect, you know. And there's also some ideas about chemical reactions in the body, different people. But he said, ultimately, the only programs which really work are Alcoholics Anonymous and programs that spin off from that. And he said that ultimately it's a social and spiritual problem. It was strange because in his community, he never used this word. It was like a new word he had to actually, you know, with us he was saying it like that. He wasn't opposed to it, but it was, as you could see, he never used the word. It was just like a social or spiritual problem like that. Yeah, like that. So that's the situation. It's just, they're looking for a solution. Everybody recognizes this. Vacho Vegam, Manasa, Krodha Vegam, right? This is the beginning of Upadeshamrita. And I'm especially focusing on this because we're giving this Nectar of Devotion seminar now. And the very beginning is a big discussion, right? Nectar of Instruction is a little discussion, but Bhakti Rav Samhita Sindhu Goswami goes into a detailed discussion of how this is happening. Why does he discuss this in Nectar of Devotion? What's the broader perspective why he's discussing this? It's in the very first part. Remember? Because he's talking about distress. What causes distress? Yeah? And that's one of the first symptoms of bhakti yoga. The first symptom is it removes distress. Then after that, after you get free from your distress and your suffering, then everything starts to become auspicious. Your job works out, your family relations work out, your mind, your plans in life have to work out. Everything becomes auspicious. Then actually you what? What you bhava, you start to minimize the value of liberation. You're just happy with wherever Krishna puts you. And it's very rarely achieved, that position of bhava. Then finally in prema bhakti, you get impenetrable bliss. You can take like a nail and try and beat on it with a hammer. You cannot penetrate your bliss. You just keep smiling. They put you in a fire and everything else. You keep on smiling. You know? It says that Krishna consciousness is like nectar on the tongue of a dumb man. Actually, you say speech impaired. No, speech impaired person. Krishna consciousness is like nectar on the tongue of a speech impaired person. He just smiles and smiles and doesn't say anything. Yeah, it's like nectar. How does it go? It's so cooling. It's like pouring nectar on your head, you know. And so burning. It's like chili peppers. You know, it's like chutney. It's so sweet you can't spit it out, and so hot you can't tolerate it. So as Krishna consciousness is so painful, so problematic serving Krishna, that you want to give it up. I'll never serve Krishna ever again. Like that. It's like Radharani. I'll never associate with this rascal ever again. Unfaithful, wretched guy. You know. But you can't give it up. Krishna consciousness, you die. Yeah. So, in the beginning, it removes distress, right? So he's discussing what is distress. And he goes into this whole thing. This is a fundamental aspect of reality. Everywhere, everybody experiences this cycle. So what's he talking about? How does he explain this? Remember how he explains this whole cycle of distress? Remember? How many bhakti shastras here? Huh? Kind of. That's it. Yeah. Okay. And the basis of everything is avidya, ignorance of our real position. We just confuse about who I am and what I'm supposed to be doing. Not in the head, but just fundamentally. I just identify being something else. And because of that, I engage in improper activities, you know, and that creates a reaction, right? And that reaction goes through different stages, like a seed, right? You plant the seed, you know. One of our life members, he had this signature line on his email. It said, "We never harvest in the same season we plant." Like that. It was a very nice thought, like that. Yeah, we never harvest in the same season we plant, like that. So many things in life we accept. I'm going to wait, but now, you know, I got to do some planting. Otherwise, there's not going to be any harvest like that. You know? So that's the idea. Our opposite side is that, you know, we don't harvest the results of our bad activities. Oh, I got away with that. Yeah, I can do what I want to do. Somewhere down the road, somebody's waiting for you behind the building with a big stick, you know, to get his revenge like that. Or the karma is there. Yeah. Yeah. One man, he was, he got a phone call from somebody, and I said, "Hey, you know, I tracked you down here. I work for this big airlines, you know, something like that, you know, Ryanair Airlines. Yeah. And, you know, and they're going to be bought out by Lufthansa or something like, you know, in a couple of days, it's going to be a merger. And therefore, the stock values, you know, the shares for Ryanair are going to go up like maybe who knows how much, because now they'll be a part of Lufthansa, you know. And because I'm a member of the, because I work for the company, For myself, I can buy a lot of things on margin like that. I can pay 10% and get like these things like that. And when it goes up, automatically we'll be able to pay everything off like that. But if I, you know, I has to be myself. And if anybody finds out I'm buying for anybody else, it invalidates it like that. So remember, I met you at that party. So hey, come on, people don't know we have a connection, so come here, let's do this together. So you take all your wife's away, you take all of her jewelry and take her to the pawn shop, whatever it's like that. You steal some money from your company, you call relatives up and say your wife needs surgery, and you get, you know, $40,000 together and give it to the guy like that, you know. And he invested, and after about 5 days, yeah, they announce Ryanair is now a part of Lufthansa and the stocks are worth like 8 times as much. Wow, now my $40,000 is worth? Yeah, okay. No, but then my wife's coming back looking for her jewelry. The relatives are calling up, asking about the hospital. My company's finally doing an audit. This guy's not giving me the money, you know. So finally I give him a call and talk to him. He says, I don't know you. What are you talking about? Oh, my God. Yeah, so your wife divorces, your relatives beat you, the company sends you to prison, you get out, you become an alcoholic, you lose your leg in an auto accident, you die a horrible death, you know, like that. So it's karma, right? So next lifetime, you come back, and you have a pretty decent birth, you know, and stuff like that, and you're living well, and you have a nice wife and good job, and then you get a very nice child. He's so sweet. The evil guy, took birth, had a nice wife, nice kid, and a very nice kid. It was really nice, beautiful, attractive kid. Daddy! Everything like that. So this evil man loves his child so much, and at a very young age, like about maybe 6 years old, the kid gets sick and dies. And the evil man has his heart ripped out of his chest. He feels so much pain like that. So you were the child, you know, that man who got cheated, come back and taking birth as the man's child to get your revenge like that. So mention this point, that you never know that maybe your children, right, are your worst enemies, come back to cause you problems like that. Yeah, you don't know. But this is the idea that the karma is there, and the different levels like that. You know, there's the, what are the levels? There's Prarabdha and Aparabdha means manifest and non-manifest, right? But then Kuta, Bija, one more. Kuta, Bija. Bija means seed. Then Kuta means like, anyway, it's a seed. And the seed begins to sprout. Maybe we can get some feeling like, hey, this is not quite right, you know, like that. You know, the sprout's there. Something's happening. I don't know what it's going to be like that, but something's happening. You know, then finally it produces almost fruit. We can see it, and then finally it produces a fruit like that. You know, and this is why we're getting, you know, the suffering, because we're being forced, whether we like it or not, by our previous activities. So how do we counteract this? How do we stop this? Huh? No, we should engage in pious activities to counteract these things. That's what Sukadeva Goswami tells Maharaj Pariksit. And Maharaj Pariksit says, well, my dear Guru Dev, I can't accept that, I'm sorry. And he gives the example of an elephant, goes, takes his bath, comes out, tosses dirt all over himself. People stop smoking and start smoking again. And Sukadeva Goswami says, yes, you're correct, we're just testing you. So you should develop knowledge, you should do austerities, these kind of things like that, become jnani. And he rejects that too, and he says, yes. See, actually, the only thing that can do it is devotional service. Yeah? Because the problem is that not only does it produce a reaction, when a tree grows, it produces fruits, right? But it also produces more seeds. Yeah, like that. So that's the problem, is it's actually self-maintaining. Yeah? In some ways, when you push for your own gratification to stop it, you create another kind of reaction, another kind of reaction like that. So you go over here and try and push that one, and you get the other one reaction. So after a while, you get all these reactions going like that, and it's just trying to like do some fruitive activity. It's like throwing a handful of rocks into the water. It produces all these ripples and counter ripples. Okay, I'm going to take another handful of rocks and throw them in the water, and they're going to land so precisely that they're going to neutralize all the waves. That's some feat, like magic guys just tosses it in, they hit the water, and all the waves become zero. They say, wow, some trick. Yeah, that's what trying to counteract an impious activity with a pious activity is like that. To some degree, you can do it. So there are shastras for prayaschittas, atonement. They are described in the Vedas, you know, to do this, but it's not the best way, but yeah, it helps. if you make an animal work too hard, and you're beating him, making him work, and he hurts himself, then you're going to suffer for this. So the atonement is, you should do a lunar fast. On the first day of the moon, well, it was the full moon or whatever it is, you can take 28 robin eggs-sized spoonfuls of food. 28 teaspoonfuls of food, okay? Next day, 27, next day, 26, next day, 25, next day. And finally, on the last day of the moon, you have to live on hot air. So it's getting every day, like all the day, I get 3 teaspoons full of food today, you know. Okay, now you've atoned, you know, for that animal, pretty much. But why did you do it? For my happiness, you know. So fruitive activities do not eliminate the desire to act fruitively, right? Either way, it's a desire for a fruitive activity, and that's the whole problem. So you're conditioning yourself to act fruitively. You know? So therefore, devotional service, what Goswami is saying, is the only way to really get free from distress. You know? And of course, the example is in Bhagavatam is Ajamil, right? And he was able to uproot in these simple reactions, so many simple reactions, by devotional service. And the essence of devotional service is chanting. So Ajamil was chanting 16 rounds a day, following the four principles. No. He just chanted one time, right? But under what condition? Huh? Yeah, no, well, what condition was he in when he chanted? Huh? Yeah. Huh? Yeah, a little more than that, you know. The Yamadutas had come for him. These are big, like, if they came in now, they'd be like, you know, again, like over 2 meters tall, and they have these bodies with bristly hair like a pig, stick, and really ugly features. It's just like, you know, these guys are not like nice guys. You know, these guys don't care about what I feel about, you know, like that. They're really, you know, terrifying, you know. Yeah. I can tell you a story. One time I was a brahmachari, like that, brahmachari. And our temple president, this is going on tape now, he'll learn about this now. He hasn't heard about it now. Charudas, he was a very heavy guy, very strong, powerful president. So he wanted to have prasadam available for any guest that came. It was a big temple, like Berkeley Temple, about the biggest temple here. And so he had these, in the morning, he had these cookies made, very nice cookies like that. And he had them locked up in one cabinet in the office like that. Only he had the key, remember the story? Yeah, like that. And so I was in the office working, you know, the office doors locked, and the Gaur Aartik's going on, you know. And I was kind of somewhere out there because there's a brahmachari who was kind of thinking about the cookies over there, locked up like that. And I was realizing, oh, only he had the key. But I was thinking, but wait a second, but the hinges are just held on by screws, like that, you know. And in my drawer there's a screwdriver, you know. The brahmachari. So I went over, I took all the screws out. What happened then, I think I had taken the cookies out, and I had two up on top, like that, and the rest were back inside. I had, three screws in out of four, and I had my mouth full of chewing gum, one cookie, and someone put a key in the door like that. And there I was with, like, two cookies up here, one in my mouth, the screwdriver. It was like I was just going to die. And so at that point, you know, I could have tried my best to like choke the cookie down, hide the other ones, get the screw in like that, taking shelter of my karma, my intelligence, my abilities. But somehow or other, because agyata sukriti, background of pious activities, of chanting every day, following the principles, there was a tendency to take shelter of Krishna. So I started chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, like that, you know. And the key didn't work. That's a good deal. Yeah. Yeah. And so then I got the thing done up, I'm choking, putting the cookies someplace, you know, like that. So my desk there, you know. And then by Bobby, his wife came, she unlocked the door and came in, she kind of looking at me, I was sitting here like trying like this. Like, yeah. And so she, Chiru had given her the keys and she got the wrong key like that to open the door like that, you know. So this is what happens, you know, it's this reaction is there. And if we don't have any kind of background of pious activities. How many kinds of pious activities are there? Yeah? There's three kinds. What they are? Yeah, but also their pious activities for fruitive results, to go to the heavenly planets. There are pious activities to get liberated from all these things, and there are pious activities to advance in devotional service. The cowherd boys were playing with Krishna as their friend. Wow, just playing with Krishna, like kids, you know, absorbed. But only after acquiring heaps of pious activities for previous lifetimes. But that's not pious activities and fruity result. That's not pious activity liberation. Prabhupada says that every single activity I'm engaging you in, you know, circumambulating Tulsi, paying your obeisances, saying the name of a devotee, you know, Vishnu Das, Narayan Das, Radha Dasi. These are all little pious activities. Punya Puja Kriti. And they're building up. It's eternal, building up. Until some point, Prabhupada says, one day you will play with Krishna. It isn't like that. One day you will play with Krishna. It's guaranteed. Just keep on going around Tulsi like that. You know, it's like a long, long trip back to Goloka like that. Yeah, that's it. It's guaranteed. Nothing else. Just circumambulate Tulsi. And bit by bit, you'll go through different levels of purification. An alcoholic, so much sinful reaction, no? For being an alcoholic. That's why you're doing it. One devotee, Bhakta Bill W., he's an alcoholic. He told me he was in a temple in Dallas, Texas. He was going to a bar. He would find some work, like unloading trucks or something like that, making a little money here and there, living in a terrible place. But really, he was living in this club, you know, where they had beer and pretzels and potato chips and stupid games and stuff, music. And he was like, during the week, he was like living on like potato chips and, you know, whatever was kind of there like that. And every Sunday, he would go to the Hare Krishna temple and eat like three or four plates of prasadam like that, you know. But he had some kind of like agyata sukriti, unconscious pious credits. So he didn't feel comfortable about just going to eat, and that's not fair, you know. So he would go in time for the sermon and for the hymns. So he'd come in time for the arti, he'd sit there, the kirtan would go on, he would sit there during the lecture. Then he would eat like, you know, three, as much as he could just eat and stuff like that. He was surviving. So he said he was going there for 1 year. It's like 52 lectures like that, you know. Shrinvatam swakata krishna punya shravana kirtanaha. So he doesn't know it, but just by hearing the sound, he was accumulating pious activities. And all this mountain of sinful reaction in his heart was going away like that. What is it called? Shravana Dasha. And next, he comes to the level where you can actually begin to appreciate it, like that. So he said after about 52 weeks, his mind said,
Bill.
Yeah, what is it? What do you want?
What are they talking about, Bill?
You know, it's like, you say, oh yeah. You know, so it was like, say for the first time in 52 lectures, he actually, you know, focused and could hear the lecture, you know, like that. The first thing he said he realized was the Hare Krishnas were vegetarians. This guy spaced out. He's saying, oh yeah, that's right. They had many meat in the food. Wow, these guys are strange, you know. Wow, you know, what else they believe in. Then he discovered the Hare Krishnas actually believed in reincarnation. You know, it's like the whole thing. It was just, you know. But then he was thinking, well, I'm not gonna come back anymore. It's just, these guys are too weird, you know, like that. But the food's pretty good, you know, like that, you know. Well, you know, maybe there is reincarnation. You know, maybe I'll take Brothers of Cockroach in the bar my next lifetime and have all the beer I want, you know, free beer like that. There's a cockroach. You know. So this is this, right? It's destroying at the root, Tadgata Mulahantri, the hearing and chanting, the bhakti yoga like that. So Rupa Goswami explains this in the very beginning of that Bhakti Rasamita Sindhu. It's a part of the Bhakti Vaibhava degree, like that. And by teaching it, you can remember it. And then we see, you know, by this knowledge, right, the jnana, because when we fall from pure bhakti yoga, it's like if you're on some tightrope in the circus, you have these guys that work like, you know, 16 meters off the ground with no tightrope, like that, with, you know, standing on somebody else's head and all this kind of stuff, the walindas. Yeah, but most people don't do that. You know, if you fall, you have a net like that. So that's varnashram dharma, right? Everybody follows some varnashram dharma, some process of karma, and you fall down from your pure bhakti yoga platform. Okay, I'm be a civilized human being, and be a decent chaste girl, I'll be a austere sannyasi, I'll be a generous grihastha. Okay. And you get back up again very easily, you know. So all this, you know, if we understand how it's working, is that, our intelligence will help us, right? Our intelligence will keep us back, going back to getting fixed in bhakti yoga. But when we finally have that, it's automatic, right? Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha. Automatically the jnana and the vairagya will come like that. But because we're not fully engaged, then we should develop, you know, knowledge like this to help us get to the platform of Raganuga or something like that. So, Atha kena prayukto yam papam charati purusha anichan api varshneya baladiva niyojitaha. O descendant of Vishni, by what is one impelled to sinful acts, even unwillingly, as if engaged by force? So, any questions? Comments? Yes? No? Yeah. It's interesting because this is material lamentation and lamenting about one's material situation, the blues, you know. Nobody loves me but my mother, and sometimes, you know, I think she's jiving me too. Blah, 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 you know. Can't get this. You know, the blues, you know, B.B. King, can't get free of those chains and things. You know, you hear it, it's like it's material lamentation. So Rupa Goswami talks about this, you know. Is it a mellow or not? Material lamentation. Is it a mellow or not? No, he says it's not. But it can act as a preservative of ecstatic, of bhava. Like you're starting to lose your stimulation to be a devotee, to be enthusiastic, to do your service, everything else like that. So lamenting about your previous simple activities, all these kind of things like that, will preserve the bhava. They'll keep it from becoming, you know, inundated like that. So then a devotee will use all these things. Either just from pragmatic experience or developing some consciousness, you'll combine these things like that, you know. Although he may not be simple, you know. Yeah, but he'll like, you know, like it was the Madhavendra Puri. He was leaving his body and he composed this really wonderful verse. Hey Nata, Hey Nata Dayarda, Hey Dina, Hey Dina, you know. Hey Dina Dayarda Nata, Hey Matura Kaveksha Doyusa. Mahakrishnamurti come, you didn't know. It's maybe the most, one of the most principal verses is our Acharya. Oh, my most merciful master of Mathura, nobody can understand the unsteadiness of my mind, having been separated from you. When will I ever see you again? Like that. This is Radharani's lamentation like that, you know. Very intense, you know. So he was chanting this at the end of his life and meditating on this. And he had one sannyasi who was a, you know, Mayavadi guy, his name Ramachandra Puri. He was coming and saying, "Oh, Gurudev, this is unbefitting of you to be lamenting like this. You should identify with the Brahman effulgence and become one with it all," like that. You know? And so Madhavendra Puri said, "Get this moron out of here. I don't want to see his face at the time of death," like that. You know? So it seems like he's lamenting. But everybody understands, still, because, see, no, he's using it, you know, as part of his whole complex of trying to stimulate the bhava to the point of prema. Like that. Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. Man, he really gets down, man. You know. Like that. Yeah. Blues. Bhakti Vinod Bhakti Thakur sings the blues like that. Gopinath. Prabhupada told George Harrison, was it George Harrison? He said, take these songs by Bhakti Vinod Thakur and just adjust them for English language. Bhaktivinoda Thakur will say, life is unsteady. like a drop of water on the leaf of a lotus flower. Any moment it can fall down. So you'd say the same thing, but you say life is unsteady like the drop of water on the leaf of a rose. Yeah? And so people in the West can appreciate that, you know? Yeah. Yeah. So you... We can take all this stuff exactly like that. You can make like heavy blues songs from Gopinath, just adjust the language like that into something people can relate to. Yeah, right on, brother. That's how it is. Yeah, you know, sing it again like that. You know? But the whole thing is technical values. Srupa Goswami is saying it's technical. Prabhupada says it's not a matter of formal language. It's a matter of technical values in spiritual development. And you find the same thing with different saints. Yeah, every saint or people like that. You know? So then, when you meet people, you can analyze them right away. You know, you see, test it where they're at. Prabhupada would just right away would start to see people, penetrate, and deal with them. No, on their level like that. Sometimes you become very humble. Other times you become aggressive and, you know, arrogant with people. You know, but just to reciprocate. You know, sometimes he would agitate people till they were just furious. Then he would get them within 5 minutes. They would be laughing with him. Like that and stuff like that. You know, he'd get them up angry and going, and then after that he would, you know, calm down, and then he would be like thinking, you know. So this is expert doctor. Okay? Yes. No, again, like if you do austerities and sacrifice, give charity to people like that, to hungry people. For example, Prasera says there are three kinds of charity. First-class charity is when you go looking for people who need something. You go looking, you find them, you give it to them. And it has the most credit. You know? Second-class charity is when you just happen to meet somebody who needs it and you give it. Third class, when people have to come to you and beg for something like that, and you give it. And he said that's reducing merit. And fourth class kind of exchange of money is value given for value received. If you give me something, I give you something. It has no pious activity, no value whatsoever like that. So by doing things like this, then you get pious activities so you can go, you know, to the heavenly planets to enjoy like anything. Imagine a young man filled with Vedic knowledge, has dozens of beautiful loving wives, has land to the horizons, has thousands of cattle, right? Imagine how much that young man is enjoying in this world. You know? Take that level of enjoyment, and I can't remember if it's 100 or 1,000, multiply it by 100 times, and you have the next highest planetary system. It's Gandharva Loka, I think. So the Gandharvas, the fairies, I think it's 1,000 actually, the fairies are enjoying like 1,000 times more than we are. But how do you get that? By doing all these pious activities on Bhumandal. So that's what that kind of karma, pious activities for fruity results. Then there's pious activities for liberations. You realize none of these things are worth it. You know, so you engage in austerities to become free from all the reactions to your karma. And the finally other kind is that there are pious activities. You see, they're just not a part of the material world. I mean, what's it, you know, running around in circles around Tulsi? It's like, what's that? You know, it's like that. You know, Prabhupada says that bhakti yoga is always forcing us onto the mental platform. Yeah, probably anybody who's been a pujari, you get up there with the incense and you're like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, yeah. So your mind is going, what are you doing like that? And it's like, why don't you, you know? So it's like, it forces you to on the mental platform, get you off the gross platform like that. You know? So these activities in devotional service, they're things which directly accumulate eternity. Habi kramo nashosti pratyo vayana vinjate swapamapyasya dharmasya trayate mahato vaya. There's no loss. It's eternally accumulating like that. Yeah. Yeah? So the more we can do like that. You can chant Hare Krishna while you're circumambulating Tulsi. Yeah, you get more then, more pious credits. Right? Huh? I guess so. Dance. Yeah. But there's karma, akarma, and vikarma. So Krishna is not talking about positive things there. Karma is activities that produce good results. Vikarma is things that produce bad results. And akarma is things which produces no material result. Like Krishna is nirguna. He has no material qualities like that. But Krishna is not talking about the spiritual world. Actually, Bhagavad Gita is the cultivation of the intellect. And Srimad Bhagavatam is the actual cultivation of the soul. Krishna says you should worship the Supreme Lord, who is the oldest, who knows everything, who is maintaining everybody. He's giving him that kind of meditation. He shows him the universal forearm, and Arjuna doesn't like that, you know. So he shows the forearm form. And just for one moment he shows Somyabhapu, the two-arm form, very beautiful. But it's just like maybe, you know, two lines in the Bhagavad Gita like that. So it's there, but it's just like it's not. The real focus of the Bhagavad Gita is basically on Krishna as the Paramatma, Mahavishnu, getting out of the material world. Bhagavad Gita is for liberation. But, you know, it's there. Its aspect is there, but it's not emphasized. You know? Then once you're liberated, then Srimad Bhagavatam starts. So, Prabhupada ki, Hare Krishna Mahamantra ki, stopping smoking ki.